Vibe Astrology.
Welcome, everyone, to Essential Astrology for Deliberate Creators. This is call number 3 with Kim Falconer and Jeanette Ma. Hello, Kim.
Hi. We're up to the houses.
I know. I'm excited to cover this. This is so practical. I mean, once we understand where to look in our charts, when there's something in particular we're wanting to manifest or look at, I think it makes us feel so much more empowered.
Absolutely. And as soon as we start to put these things together, okay, these are the houses, these are the signs that rule the houses, everything begins to fall into place. So today, I'll give you a brief review. So we have 4 essential basic building blocks of astrology: the planets, signs, houses, and aspects. And the planets represent, this is to think of them as the actors. This is the energy. What is expressing? The signs are the costumes, the costume or the getup that the actor is wearing. The houses, which we're going to talk about today, is the stage or the set that the actor is playing on. This is the ground. This is the territory. Where is it taking place? And the aspects, which are the how, these are the scripts the planets or actors have been handed, and this tells them how they're going to relate to each other. So today we're talking about the where. Where is this happening? And realize that we all have 12 houses in our zodiac. So we all experience each of these 12 areas of life. Some of us will spend more time in one area of life or a stronger focus at a different time in our life in certain places, and it changes. We move through it. And we'll talk more in another series about the transits and how they wake up different areas of life. But for right now, let's learn what those pieces of pie mean. Okay, we're going to start with house number 1. And again, you'll notice if we refer to Will Smith's natal chart as our example chart, you notice that the houses, again, like the signs, run in counterclockwise. We are reading these in counterclockwise motion. The first house, and by the way I'm going to do this, Jeanette, I should have mentioned to you in our notes, I would love to do this not just 1 through 12, but look at the pairs. So I'll talk about 1 and 7. Okay. We'll talk about 2 and 8. I think it's so important to start thinking about the signs and the houses in a duality, in a pair of oppositions. And you'll see as we talk about them how they represent the kind of finding a balance between these two areas of life.
I think that's a helpful way to learn them too.
I think
that's a great approach.
I'm trying to think. I didn't learn them this way, and that's why I want you guys to, because I think it'll make it easier. So house number 1, this, I like to relate it to as our shop window. This is what we let other people see of us. Some people call it the persona or the mask, but realize that it's not a finite thing. For example, Will Smith has Leo rising, but he may not always be wearing his Leo mask. The more evolved, air quotes, not sure what that means, but the more evolved a person is, the more flexible they are about using every part of themselves as part of the persona. But we have different masks in different areas of life. When it comes to our general ascendant or rising sign, what's sitting there on the house cusp of the first, this is what we like to show the world. Knowing that this shop window, we can get in there and be a window dresser and we can change that look. We can change the mask. It's not set in stone, but it is a very authentic way of meeting and presenting ourselves to the world. So it has a lot to do with self, with a capital S. And the opposite house, which is the 7th house, or also known as the descendant, which is opposite of the ascendant, this is other. This is us with another, in partnership, in relationship. It rules marriage and business partnerships and things that we do together in a committed way. Socially significant, committed, one-to-one personal relationships. That's the 7th house. So we've got this balance between I am and we are. So can you speak to our desires would be if we want to look at this area of life for what cues on how to manifest?
You know, I think this will be an interesting thing to look at, because typically if we're looking to create something to do with relationships, we might automatically go to the seventh house. But Kim, I'm kind of curious about how the fifth house plays out here, since that's the one of romance.
Yes.
So maybe when we get to the fifth house, we can talk about the distinction between whether we should be looking at seven or five when we're talking about relationships. But again, like you said, this isn't just romantic relationships for the seventh house, but if we were having a business relationship or any type of committed interaction with another person, we're going to get a lot of clues about that by looking at what's happening in our seventh house.
That's right. Absolutely. And I think when it comes to the first house, the word that comes to mind is image. And even though this, we'll get to the sixth house in a minute, and it rules the body, the health of the body, this first house has a lot to do with our relationship to our image, which means our body. And I think if we have any work that we could do, any room for improvement with how we feel about our body, we would be looking at the first house, and also issues of self-esteem and where do I stand in the world? How do I present myself to the world? But yes, you said the key word when it came to the seventh house, you said it, it's commitment. So relationships that are based on commitment, or if we believe our desire is for commitment, we're going to gravitate there towards the seventh. Yes.
I'll save my question for when we hit five.
Okay, good. Sounds good. All right. The next pair of houses is the second house and the eighth house. Actually, wait, dial back. Before we leave the first and seventh house, as we look at Will Smith's chart, right away, the question that Jeanette and I get asked probably more than any other question in astrology is, I don't have any planets there. It's an empty house. Does that mean I won't have any relationships, or I have no sense of self? And so let's clear up immediately what this whole buzz is about empty house. Number one thing to know, your essential thing to know about houses, is there is no such thing as an empty house. And I'm going to show you why. Shall I show them why?
Please do. Okay. I think, yes, many will find this very reassuring who are concerned not to see anything in their money house.
That's right. Or their relationship house, or their friendship house, or whatever. Okay, so follow along with me. Let's find the cusp of the seventh house over here at 0 degrees Aquarius, 56 minutes for Will. And put your cursor there. And if we go counterclockwise up to 21 Aquarius 20, that's the entire seventh house. And as we see, he has no actual planets or points, traditional planets or points, falling in that area. And to the uninitiated, it would appear to be empty. And we have to ask, does Will Smith hit a void when it comes to relationship? And no, he does not. Here's what's going on. No house is empty because, number one, there is always a sign on that house cusp. He has Aquarius. And that sign on the house cusp is ruled or linked to one or more planets. It has a connecting factor to a specific planet, and some of them have dual planets. With Aquarius, it's dual planet. So right away, we know that he has the ruler of Aquarius, Saturn, and the ruler of Aquarius, Uranus, associated with the seventh house. If we look in his chart to where they fall, we see Saturn is in Aries, so that adds Mars. That adds a Mars energy. And we see that Uranus is in Virgo, that adds Mercury. So we have already Saturn, Uranus, Mercury, and Mars associated with the seventh house. Then, we have to overlay, and we haven't talked about this, but there is a natural flow of the signs where if we did it, what's called an air quote natural chart, we would put Aries on the ascendant and each following sign would rule each house. And we will, if you look at your course materials, you will see a link there under Will Smith's natal chart, a link to the natural signs and houses. So there's a natural chart for you to look at as well. So click on that right now, and you will see that Libra rules naturally the seventh house. So for everyone, there is a Libra influence in the seventh house, and that means Venus. So shall we add this up? Will Smith, when it comes to relationship, even though there's no planets per se in that house, has the influence of Mercury, Venus, Mars, Saturn, and Uranus. And then you have to look in his natal chart and see where they are all aspecting other planets. Got that?
So it's clear there's more than meets the eye initially. Thank you for sharing that,
yes,
Kim.
Okay, so that's just if that feels a little mind-boggling, don't worry about it, but because that'll make more and more sense as we go on. The point is, there's nothing empty out there. Nothing empty. Plenty of materials. What you will find is that when there aren't other planets, natal planets, in a house, the energy of that house is less complex. So even though he has those five planetary influences, he could, if he had three other, if he had Moon and Neptune in there natally, he would have that on top of it, which makes for more complex needs, desires, and drives to express. So it, empty houses actually tend to be somewhat less, potentially less complex areas of life where more straightforward experiences occur. Not maybe with Aquarius. Known for its straightforwardness, but I hope that helps. If you, by contrast, look at his third house, when it comes to what he thinks and his consciousness and how what that guy is like when you talk to him, lots going on. You get Jupiter, Pluto, Uranus, Sun, and the South Node. Whew. So, yeah, he'd be quite a conversationalist. All right, with that clear, let's look at the next set of houses, which is the second house and the eighth house. The second house has to do with possessions, what we possess. It is our resources and our sense of self-worth. Our talents have a lot to do with our resources as well. So it's like untapped talents. This is also our money house. And we'll all, ding, 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 get a connection there with our sense of worth and values. So if we think about the second house, we're thinking about our natural core values and our relationship to money, which is just energy. And in our culture, in many cultures over millennium, has been a reflection of our value. And I think that's why money falls into this house, is because it is often a symbol of value. I'll fill in the opposite side, which is the eighth house. So where the second house is our values and our money and our resources, the eighth house is joint finances, joint resources, joint creative projects, and things that we do with others. It's a very intimate energy of connecting. It rules things that bring us together in this erotic way. And when I say erotic, it's not necessarily sexual. You've probably heard me talk about this before. It's eros in the Greek sense of the word, where two or more things come together in such a way that there is lasting transformation. So this is the natural house of Scorpio, where things want to merge intensely and transform. But it's when we're over here in the eighth, we're talking about my money when I merge it with someone else, my emotions when I merge those with someone else, my body when I merge it with something else. So it's that merging, connecting. Whereas in the second, it's my core values, full stop. My, you know, my money, not yours. Does that make sense?
It does make sense. So if someone was wanting to manifest greater financial abundance, the second house would be an obvious place for them to start looking. But the eighth house, they wouldn't want to exclude that necessarily.
No, they would want because a lot of projects are co-projects, mm-hmm. and you definitely want to be looking at your eighth house if anything's coming up for you around shared resources. And but it does link. You can only bring to the eighth house what you're pulling out of the second. Like, I can't go into the eighth house and suddenly become this amazing money manifester if I don't have my second house in order, if I'm not already feeling very valuable and like my talents and resources are expressing and my core values are being lived out. So they are definitely tied together. You don't want to see them in isolation.
So the question I wanted to ask you about the second house was when I'm talking about deliberate creation with clients, I'm very often asking them to get clear on what their core values are. Mm. And we have some processes in coaching world to help them do that. But could a person learn about their core values by looking at their second house?
Absolutely. Let's look at will. It's ruled by Leo. And that links the sun there. And that is core value creativity. I create. I create and shine in the world. That's not all that's there. We look at Mars there. And he's got a warrior core value.
I was going to say action, right?
Action. Yeah. You take action. You find, you know, and you... and this is his... this is the part of him that is... working. What does he say? His work ethic. And this is Mars in Virgo. Virgo is earth sign. Oh. And oh my God, can it be task oriented? And Will will sit there and he will say, when the other guy's sleeping, I'm working. When the other guy's eating, I'm working. This is his Mars.
Yeah, he says, no one will work harder than me.
Yes, exactly. And that's his Mars. Now, if you had a client who was desperately trying to goof off, slacker manifest. And there are places for where these techniques are totally appropriate, even for that same person. But if they were trying to get in touch with their core values and maybe boost their finances, you don't tell a Mars in Virgo in the second house to get in touch with their slacker core value. They may have one, especially if they've moon in the 12th in Taurus or something. But with Mars there, you want to, and that's a very Aries warrior adventure energy, you want them to get in touch with that. And you'd say, well, where is your core value that likes to just go on adventure? This reminds me of the Red Ferrari guy story. Mm. I don't know where, it'd be so cool to have his chart. But first of all, Red Ferrari's ruled by Mars. That's a Mars image. And what the whole thing was freedom. And there is a really strong freedom in that energy. So maybe you should just briefly tell that story so anybody who hasn't heard it, this doesn't sound like Chinese to them.
I'll tell the short version, but this was a fun one that one of my colleagues shared. She was hired by a guy who wanted to double his income, and she asked why he wanted to do that, and he said because he wanted to buy a red Ferrari. And she kept asking why. She was drilling down to the essence of what he wanted, and when she kept asking why to every answer that he gave, it eventually was revealed that what he really wanted was freedom. So she said, your homework is to go find ways to feel free every day. And he came up with three things. He finger painted with his three-year-old. He slept naked. And he stopped wearing underwear to work. These were three things that made him feel free. I'm not saying they would work for everyone else because we're all different. But it's what connected him to a feeling of freedom. And long story short, he not only doubled his income, he made his annual income in 1 month. he was a small business owner, and his company got on a bid list for a project that he never should have been on because his company was too small to be considered for it. But he was on the list, so he submitted a bid, and he won the project. But he called Sharon when Sharon Wilson was the coach who he was working with. When he went to the Ferrari dealership and picked out his car, they approved his credit, they drew up the paperwork, and once it was within reach, he realized, this isn't what I really want. What I really want is to take a sabbatical from work, take my family on vacation, right? There's some true freedom.
Yes.
But I love that story as an example of identifying what we value, as well as getting creative about activating the vibration.
Absolutely. And here's the essence that I get out of that is that she, okay, I don't know if she was looking at his astrology chart. She drilled down instead and got him to say what it was. But if you looked at the astrology chart and saw that core value of freedom, or as we look at wills, we see this drive for adventure, and also an area of life where he really needs to be the boss, where Mars is, the key was to activate that core value. It wasn't like try to go out there and make more money. She didn't give mm-hmm. him a business plan. She mm-hmm. didn't coach him on anything to do with business mm-hmm. or money. She said, go find three ways to live your core value.
It's pretty magical.
It's magical. It's magical. So the astrology and these houses can show us the ground of where that magic is happening for us, because it's just such a personal energy signature. And it's not automatic that we know what those core values are. We spent mm-hmm. a lot of years in life being told that what our core values should be. And if we're people pleasers, it's going to be very hard for us to counteract that desire. We're not going to want to go against what we're expected to be. So it can be tricky finding core values. So, all right, very good. Got a strong feeling of second and eight. Now, the third and ninth houses are so interesting, because in traditional ancient astrology, the third house ruled short journeys and the ninth house ruled long journeys. And as time went on, and the combustion engine and jets and all that, the astrologers were saying, well, how long does a journey have to be before it goes from the third house to the ninth house? Because you can see how they're linked here. And when it comes to journeys, in the third house, these journeys are very much in the neighborhood, in the close. What they came up with was third house journeys are familiar. You've been there before. You're going over familiar ground. Ninth house journeys, ninth house naturally ruled by Sagittarius, are explorations into the unknown. So if I lived in Santa Cruz, which I once did, and I flew to New York every weekend, let's not make it the weekend, every Monday morning to have a meeting with my publisher, that journey would be third house short journey, because it's familiar. I do it all the time. I might be flying to London once a month, short journey, because it's regular, it's familiar. That's third house. If I lived in Santa Cruz and I'd never been to Carmel Valley, which is just, you know, an hour and a half down the road, that would be a ninth house long journey. I've never been there before. So, wow. Yeah, that's what we've got. And this will give you an essence of what the meaning of these two houses. The third house traditionally rules the mind, what's conscious, the knowledge that you gain, what you know, and how you communicate it. This is the natural house of Gemini, and it's what we speak, what we learn, what we teach, how we connect, the talking, the written and spoken word, very much the written word, too. The ninth house, again, explorations into the unknown. So this is where you take your mind or body or spirit somewhere it's never been before. So if it's the body, you are traveling somewhere you've never been before. And if it's to a new suburb of Salt Lake City to look at a house and you've never been there before, mm-hmm. you've just had a ninth house journey.
Very cool.
If your mind is going somewhere it's never been before, you're learning something new. Maybe you're in university and maybe you're working on a PhD and researching. You're doing something, gaining knowledge that you've never experienced before. With spirit, it could be a new meditation technique, a new yoga practice, something that connects you to your spiritual world in a new way. You might get a new tarot deck and start learning how to interpret it. So get a feeling for how the third house and the ninth house are linked. But it's almost like the ninth house becomes this higher octave, this new territory of the third house.
So if someone were looking to manifest something like a stronger relationship with spirit, or maybe if they wanted to experience some sort of channeling, would the ninth house be where they would start looking for clues as to how to engage that?
I think the ninth house could be very strong for that. The 12th house is immersion in it. The ninth house is what we believe about it. It's our meaning and belief. So I think it all has to begin with this exploration and search for meaning. And that's very much the ninth house.
Got it.
Yeah, and where the third house, I mean, yeah, if someone comes and says, you know, I just so want to get this book published, well, this becomes very interesting because the third house is the writing of the book, what you're communicating. The ninth house rules publishing, disseminating it out into the world. So I think any of these manifesting questions that evolve around what we think and consciousness and the expansion of consciousness, the written, the spoken word, travel, which seems basic, but just, you know, going new places, there is a very powerful connection between the two houses, and we want to look at the dynamic between them.
Cool.
Yeah. So just as an example, for our example chart with Will, in his third house, if he's just doing the familiar journey, I'm sure he travels a lot, just the nature. Let's say he's shooting a film in South America and he's back and forth, I don't know, to Brazil. And it's becoming familiar because this shoot's been going on for, you know, ages, et cetera, et cetera. He would be looking at the third house, and boy, that's a very active house. But we see Virgo on the cusp, and if we remember, Virgo is where we get very busy, but we need to get the feeling is to get very organized. Hmm. With a familiar journey or familiar communication, this guy needs to needs the notes written down, the shooting script ready, super organized, like five or six continuity editors on either side of him. He wants to be like super precise. But if he's going somewhere he's never been before, like maybe, what do they call it when they go, scouting. If they're scouting for a location, or he's going on holiday. We touched on this in our last talk with the signs. He's got Pisces there. So we would be telling him to, you know, take his finger off the button, I think, in that area of life. So it's very important, I think, as Astro LOA coaches, to identify what ground are they standing in. And if we're working with ourselves, what area of life are we really focused on to do our deliberate creation? Because as we can see, particularly with Virgo Pisces opposition, there's some very different techniques appropriate for each. So we need to identify it. Does that make sense?
It does. I've heard before that the third house rules siblings.
Yes, it does.
So does the ninth house also have family members?
Yes, it does. Cool? And in your, yes. And I'll make sure that in your, I believe in your handout for houses, there are a list of the people associated with each house, which, thank you, Jeanette, so we hadn't mentioned that yet, that there are specific people related to each house. The ninth house is in-laws. So it definitely, it would rule people like your publisher, maybe your, if you are inclined towards gurus or spiritual leaders. Again, there's a mix between the 12th and the 9th, but the 9th house is there for that. But yes, each house has people associated with it. So siblings, we can imagine if we look at Will's chart that there was probably some complex dynamics, and probably still are, with his siblings. I know he has brothers. I don't know if he has a sister. We'd have to look that up. Whereas with in-laws, He's got that Pisces approach. I wonder if he just kind of, just kind of kicks back and lets it all unfold.
That would be a good approach.
That would be a very good approach for him. Whereas if he had Aries there with the, and he was having in-law issues of any kind, he would need to take the bull by the horns and just, you know, take action and stand his ground and state some rules and get
that's
all
a great the example.
Aries up it. Yeah. So that's helpful. All right. So the next house duo is the 4th and 10th. And this combination is very interesting because no two astrologers seem to agree on which parent. This is a parental axis. And some will say the 4th rules the mother and the 10th the father, and others vice versa. And others will say if the moon is in a masculine sign or the yang sign, then it's the four. Anyway, there's a lot of little ideas. And what I think it boils down to is that when it comes to parent, they rule, these houses rule other things, but when it comes to the parent, the 10th house is about the parent that shaped you for society and was more out there parent. And often that's the mother. It has more of a day-to-day influence on you, but not always. And the 4th house, because the 4th house is the Cancer-ruled sign of secrets, is the hidden side of the chart. It's the hidden hidden parent. So often that's the father. My approach is to be very flexible and understand the family history. It's pretty easy to see which parent belongs in which house. But know that the 4th and 10th house dynamic includes the parents. The 4th house is home and family and nurturing. It's naturally ruled by Cancer and the moon. And so we do tend to think, well, wouldn't that be mother? But not if mother had a very powerful influence on your relationship to the world, kind of your out there outcome.
Okay.
The 10th house is career, mission, profession. There's this whole dynamic with here I am in the home and in my sanctuary, and then the opposite out there in the world relating to the public. This is my career, my reputation in society, my identity in society, and so forth. So we've got this strong dynamic. You can see how it's very important to have a balance between your inner peace, sanctuary, and internal life, your inner life, and that outer, external, what you put out in the world. And note with Will's dynamic, it's very different because he's Libra ruled in his 4th house. So he likes to live with someone else, probably a relationship. And this is more, he's more people pleasing in the home. He's more powerhouse. I'm the boss out there in the public with Aries. So I think in the case where, let's say I want to manifest a new home, it's important to think of both these dynamics because what we nurture within ourselves, then we bring out into the world, and the home represents that what surrounds and protects us.
This is giving me all sorts of insights over people I've lived with before.
Well, it's a huge clue. And number one, we can go to our 4th house and think, what's ideal for me in a home? And if I've got, if it's Pisces ruled, I might want to live alone and build a sanctuary and or maybe it's a spiritual mecca where people come and meditate. And but there would be a sense of retreat, need to retreat and need for peace. This is not an area where you just want Grand Central Station and everything like that. Whereas, again, like with Libra there, or even Taurus, which is Venus rule, there is a desire to share and a desire to create kind of beauty. And especially with the earth signs, they want the real natural beauty around them and a sensual place. whereas mm-hmm. other people may not be even that connected to it. So there's no right or wrong. There is only authentic. But if you're going to move in with someone, please look at their fourth house class before you sign the papers. Don't you think, Jeanette?
Yeah. Wise words. Well, now that we know what to look for, this will make all the difference in the world.
Exactly. Because, again, it's so important not to think, ew, they have that. It's not every one of these is beautifully perfect for that person. The key is to honor it, to build a little inner altar to it, respect it. Mm-hmm. In your home. Okay. So this is super helpful in those, and also really helpful in those who want to launch a career and so forth, and being hesitant. I've had clients before that come to me and they've got all kinds of Aries going on in their 10th house and they're saying, I just don't know, you know, I think I need to prep more. And I'm going, push the button now. It's, you know, I don't know what part of them's hesitating, but it sure the heck isn't the part that has anything to do with career. So, yeah, it's good, very helpful stuff. Okay, we're around to the 5th and 11th house dynamic. This is a wonderful, they all are, but the 5th house is beautiful. This is ruled by Leo and linked to the sun. And I think what ties the 5th house together is everything that makes us feel special, that we put our personal stamp on. So it's our creative self-expression and how we play with that. And the emphasis is on play. It rules pictures we paint, stories we tell, music we write, dances we choreograph. It rules love affairs, because everybody try to think back. It might be back a while or it might be very current. But how unique and special does that romantic uncertainty? There's no commitment, but there is this just absolute outpouring of passion and desire and excitement. That is what can make us, you know, we're saying I'm walking on clouds. That is fifth house romance, something that activates the heart. The whole thing about the fifth house, which also rules the heart, says your heart has to be in it. Your heart has to be in it. It also rules children, because this is, again, a personal stamp, a creation of our physicality that tends to last beyond us. So,
does that mean that someone who was looking to manifest pregnancy or having children should look to their fifth house for that?
Absolutely. And okay. Checking their core values that are kind of linked around the fifth house, what's authentic to them, and finding other ways. It's not like go, you know, time your fertility cycle and la la la. It's, well, it's probably a combination of getting clear on any resistance, but we can go to the fifth house and discover if there's any fears or tolerations or resistance around children, around our next great creative venture, or even around romance. And it can help us, yeah, expand there. The 11th house is about one to many. This is Aquarius ruled, and where the 5th house is my unique creative expression, the 11th house is who am I in a collective? How do I express in the group energy with friends? This is lots of people in this house. So in the 5th house, it's the lover or the creative mentor or the child. In the 11th, it's my creative group. It's my, you know, it's my life drawing class, and we all go and do this together, that sort of thing. Birds of a feather. And it's also very much about goals and aims for the future.
I wondered about that. So sometimes I'll hear from someone who says they don't know what they want. They don't know what their next desire is. Mm. I wonder if they could get some hints from the 11th house, or would you suggest they look at one of their planets for that?
It's... It's a very good question. And I wonder this very same thing too. Where do we go? Because we get that question a lot. Like, what's right for me next? And the first thing we often want to do is get them tuned in to their own inner guidance. But there's obviously some kink there that's hindering that natural welling up of the next thing. You know, when it's flowing free, we know what that next thing is, and we're on gung-ho for it. So the 11th house can help us. I tend to go to the transits, and again, this is a little bit outside our first essential call, but there is a tutorial in the video porthole about the transits. There's two of them, like an intro and a little bit for a deeper explanation. But as the transits light up the chart, they can indicate what our next great step is, and where things might just really open up for us. It depends on the chart. I think that if someone's not tuned into their guidance, into their next great thing, they either, it's time for them to just let go and relax for a bit, and allow for that muse-like energy to rush up again, or there's something they're resistant to it. It's so big and wonderful, it's freaking them out, and we want to And in that case, the 11th house can be super helpful.
That's an exciting thought.
Yeah. Okay, and the last pair of houses is the 6th and 12th. And the 6th house, this is our magic. we've done a, Jeanette, we and I have done a, it's in the free calls, I believe, talk about ritual and ritual magic. And we do talk quite a bit about the 6th house there.
And that was a really good call.
Yeah, yeah. And the 6th house, again, like all the houses, it rules this myriad number of things. It rules the health of the body. It rules our diet and exercise and nutrition. It rules pets, the animals under our care. It rules employers and employees. In the old times, it rules servants. And it rules gadgets, like corkscrews and can openers and medical instruments, and it rules ritual magic. And of course, we want to know what the heck ties all these things together. And they are all ways and means of accomplishing our will.
That's cool.
Yeah, because a healthy body moves us through the world. Servants, if we have any, or employees or VAs or PAs, they help support us in our goals, in our whatever they are. The pets, I think still in these current times, it's reminding me of some stories. The dogs are going to warn us of an intruder. The cat is going to keep the vermin out of the kitchen. They serve us. They serve our will. Can openers, just try to open one without it. And ritual magic. Ritual magic is deliberate creation with props. And that's all. It's the exact same thing. It's set an intention, run a ritual, create what you want. It is the means of accomplishing your will or your desire. So this is what the 6th house is about. And it's a very busy house. It's ruled by Virgo. It's practical. It's discerning. And boy, does it want to get the job done. Whereas the 12th house, the other thing about the 6th house is all this will and desire manifesting is about creating order out of chaos. Think of the universe or your vortex of desires as this kind of swirling infinite possibilities. This is before we collapse the wave, before we focus our energy on it, there is chaos. That's the 12th house. The 6th house is we're focusing our energy on it. We're collapsing the wave. We're choosing an experience, whether we call that an alternate universe where this is the thing that's happening, however we want to see it. This is the manifestation. So when we flip over to the 12th house, we're looking at the beauty of chaos, where there is no distinction, no waves are collapsed, all is one, and we immerse in this well of collective unconscious. And it is a place of service where will is not so much about our desires, but about those who really engage in the 12th house become a mouthpiece for those who do not yet have a voice. So we have people who are animal rights and carers and activists, people who are standing up for the environment, people are standing up for women's rights in countries where they have none. We become a collective voice for the will of those who are unable to speak. So there is this sense of spiritual service, I suppose, in the 12th.
It might be my imagination, Kim, but it seems to me like your crows got pretty excited when you started talking about the sixth house.
Yes, they did.
And I don't know if that's because they're pets or because they're magic.
I think both. Both of the above. Yeah, they're up there on the roof right now wanting to reinforce purpose in all their creation. One of the things, I have moon in the sixth house, so one of the things I might do if I want to deliberately create anything is go nurture an animal. That's because that's just such a core value, you know. I could go up onto the rooftop garden and feed the birds.
Well, this has been a really, really good look at the houses. Is there anything else you wanted to let people know as we wrap up this call?
I think this gives this, because we want to keep this into the essentials, realize right away that we could speak for an hour on each house and each sign and so forth. But the goal of our course is to get you tuned in to the idea of what are the signs, what are the planets, what are the houses, what are the aspects. So you have the essential feeling of them. And what I'd like you to do now is look at your chart. Start with the first and seventh house dynamic. Remind yourself of, and you'll have the notes, just click on your PDF notes, and look at what that first and seventh house dynamic is. And notice the signs ruling the cusps. And think about, what's my natural expression here? What's my most powerful, likely expression? The question isn't, how am I expressing here? But what would it be most natural? And just play with it that way. And then you can go back and compare that to how you are expressing that way in the moment. And not in a judgmental way, but just to see where you might be able to honor the core values of that area of life more. Okay, so our next call is on the planets, and we're going to run through the energies, or the what is operating. We're going to look at those actors and where they fall in the signs and houses. So stay tuned.
You know what I love, Kim? I love that for as long as I've been studying this, for as much as I feel like I've already learned, I continue to learn more every time you talk about these things. So I'm looking forward to our next call.
Fabulous. Well, I'll tell you what, I learn more every time we talk about this as well. So it's that would be our final thing we'd like to leave with you with in this call, is that it's an ongoing study. You're at the very beginning of learning these essentials, and it doesn't matter if you're 10 years down the track or 20 or 30 or 40, it is an ongoing study, and you learn something new all the time. So basically, enjoy the journey, and we'll see you on the Planets call.
Right on. Thanks, Kim. Thanks for listening, everyone.
Thank you.